You may have been curious to see if your ancestry can be tracked back to Africa, Asia, or somewhere else on the planet. So you spit in a vial or you swab your cheek and you send it to a company's lab to test your DNA. But after you receive the blueprint of your DNA, what happens to that data? A recent case shows us that law enforcement could potentially use it to solve crimes.
Joseph James D'Angelo has been called a lot of things by law enforcement. He's been called the East Side Rapist. He's been called the Visalia Ransacker, the original Night Stalker, and the Golden State Killer. Today, it's our pleasure to call him defendant.
The Golden State Killer case had gone cold decades ago, but in late April, law enforcement officials arrested Joseph James D'Angelo for a string of brutal rapes, murders, and robberies across California in the 70s and 80s. KQED reporter Alex Emsley came on the show after the arrest.
These crimes occurred throughout the state of California, from north to south, and initially they weren't thought to have been related. And it was only through DNA testing that came about really a decade after the last murder that is attributed to this killer occurred that investigators started to put these pieces together and realize that all of these crimes likely had the same perpetrator.
And with this DNA, officials reopened the cold case. And with a few leads, law enforcement turned to a genealogical database called GEDmatch. They created a profile with the DNA evidence, as NYU professor Aaron Murphy described on this show back in April.
My understanding is they found at least a relative, it seems like a second cousin or something, and they traced up to a great-great-grandfather, and then they essentially went and mapped out the family tree, trying to use public information to rule out people who probably wouldn't be the suspect because of, say, the wrong age, the wrong gender, the wrong geographic location, trying to find someone in California who would fit the profile that they had of the killer.
Ava Kaufman is a freelance journalist and contributing writer with The Intercept, and she says cases like the Golden State Killer raise questions about how law enforcement is using DNA to solve crimes. As part of our week-long series on police technology and privacy, we're looking at DNA and how law enforcement's use of that very personal information has changed in recent years. Ava Kaufman took us back to the start, less than three decades ago.
DNA has been used since about the early 90s to catch criminals and also to find missing persons. And it is a really valuable and precise tool. It's not used as frequently as one would think, since for a long time, processing times have taken a while. And, you know, the technology wasn't really at a level in which it could be, you know, rolled out and used cheaply. But that's beginning to change. And so we're starting to see the use of DNA technology even local law enforcement departments, you know, setting up their own databases now.
And so let's walk a little bit through this, because I think we hear a lot about it on television and in movies. You know, we have the DNA and now we know who the killer is, et cetera. But it's more involved than that. Let's talk a little bit about whose DNA is collected. At what point is DNA collected by police? And then how is that DNA generally stored?
Yeah, so until very recently, the main way DNA was collected was if someone was convicted of a felony, or if someone was a sex offender, or if someone was a missing person. And that DNA would be stored in the FBI's CODIS database, which stands for Combined DNA Index System. And that database has pretty strict regulations in terms of how often it can be searched and the actual location of the DNA, you know, on the chromosome that's collected in order to protect someone's privacy, so that, you know, they were collecting an area of the chromosome that doesn't reveal sensitive health information. But now, as DNA technology has become more widespread, we're actually seeing departments set up their own databases. And so we're getting this alternate system. They're kind of called rogue databases, where local departments, not subject to the same strict accreditation guidelines of CODIS, are collecting DNA from all kinds of people. So we're not just getting felons in these databases. We're getting witnesses to a crime, people who are pulled over at traffic stops and getting their cheeks swabbed.
And I'm just curious, what rights, if any, do citizens have when they encounter a police officer or a law enforcement officer who wants to take their DNA?
It's pretty troubling because in 2015, the Supreme Court ruled that there was no need actually for a warrant or to be convicted for your DNA to be taken, and that it counts as a reasonable search.
As I mentioned earlier, we're looking at the different types of technologies, and obviously DNA testing is one, as you've mentioned, that is increasing. One of the latest developments that we've learned about in policing has been the use of something called rapid DNA. And last year, Attorney General Jeff Sessions actually mentioned it at a congressional hearing.
Rapid DNA analysis, it presents tremendous opportunities to solve crimes in an effective way. Can produce justice because it is a kind of thing that you can't fake or mislead. So I am very strongly in favor of that.
Ava, can you tell us exactly what rapid DNA is?
So rapid DNA is essentially taking an entire DNA lab and the usual 2-week to several month process. These labs have a lot of backlogs that may occur, and kind of miniaturizing it into a portable machine where all you need is to swab someone's cheek, you know, put that sample in a container, plug that tube into the machine, and in less than 2 hours, so, you know, maybe if you took a long lunch, you would get DNA results back. So these machines are pretty incredible because all of a sudden you have a portable lab you can take with you. You could easily exonerate someone. You could see very quickly whether someone, you know, should be held longer if they, you know, have a criminal record that matches with an identity already in your database. Rapid DNA was used in the Ghost Ship Warehouse fire in Oakland to identify bodies of people who passed away there.
Well, I guess in instances of a natural disaster, it would make sense as the one that you mentioned. But aren't there concerns about civil rights?
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, we don't necessarily have guidelines, certainly not on a state and local level, about how long these samples can be kept. So there's also concerns about, let's say a sample gets taken because you're an innocent person, and then it's still kept in this database and can be searched indefinitely and can lead to false matches, as you say. There's also concerns about, you know, forming a kind of database that would lead to ethnic or racial profiling. If rapid DNA kits are used more at the border than in other locations, that DNA is going to come from certain ethnic groups. If it follows the racialized trends in policing, we're going to see more Black and brown people swept into these DNA databases who would then be subject to the possibility of false matches at a higher rate.
Fascinating stuff. Ava Kaufman is a freelance journalist and contributing writer with The Intercept. Ava, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm Ira Flatto, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.